may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Yes, now if I'm being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with you all. For the same reason, you also be glad and rejoice with me. The statement that Paul offers at the end of verse 16, flowing into verse 17, is where I want us to focus our attention. He said that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. Paul is talking about the path of his life, the things that he has accomplished in life, what he has done in life. And what he says with regard to Philippians is, I don't want for my work to have been wasted and run in vain. And then he comes and says, in addition, I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice of your faith. I'm glad and rejoice for you all. He says, I'm being poured out as a drink offering. An imagery that might pass us by a little bit because we're not familiar with the altar sacrifices. But you have the sacrifice on the altar and the drink offering would be poured out over that. The pouring out is different than the sacrifice. Paul is simply saying here, I'm spending my life and my life is being spent. It's not the day of his death that's in view. It's how he is spending his life. And what he's saying is, as I'm pouring out my life, as I'm spending my life, I hope and pray that my life as I have spent it has not been in vain. Different than what we will refer to in just a moment from the book of Ecclesiastes. When Solomon will open the book and close the book, it has the haunting refrain of vanity of vanity, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. And the fact is, we're going to spend the days of our life. We're not going to be able to refrain from spending the days of our life any more than the day of our death we can forestall. We're not going to come up to the day of our death and say, this is really not a convenient day for that to happen. Can we put this off until tomorrow? I haven't got my plans made yet. Can we put this off to the end of the week? This just really doesn't fit into my schedule. If you'll let me time this out, we're not going to be able to stop that. And neither are we going to be able to halt the days of our life. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. And this is Paul's last letter, as I'm sure that you are aware. As Paul was writing this last letter to his young protege Timothy, he uses somewhat the same language in this closing chapter. Verse 6. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. Notice, the drink offering and the time of departure are two different things. And you have that same imagery again as Paul is approaching the end of his life. As he writes this last letter, he is reflecting on his life with Timothy and says, I'm now being poured out. The days of my life, I'm spending the days of my life. The question is, for what are we spending the days of our life? Is it just simply to make donut holes round to the square? Is it to the end to simply have the collection of our library? I realize books are becoming antiquated because of digital. A few years ago, I went to the digital process, and now I have more books on my Logos program than I do on my shelf. In fact, many of the books I have on my shelf are on my Logos program. I have refused to get rid of the hard copies because I still like them. But are we just about amassing a library so that when we end, we can talk, at the days of our life end, we can talk about how big our library is? The question is, for what are we spending our life? Well, let's kind of take an interview of the man on the street just a moment. Let's interview Solomon for just a moment. As I said, when Solomon begins his book, the book of Ecclesiastes, the book of the old man Solomon, he begins with a book and ends with a book, vanity and vanity, all vexation of spirit. Vanity and vanity, all is as vanity of the wind. He talks about the vanity and vexation of the spirit and the wind. The idea of that is, little children love the little bubbles that you blow. You got the little bottle of soap, and you got the little wand that you stick in there, and you pull that and you blow. I wish I had been smart enough to invent something that simple, don't you? You can stick that little wand in there and pull it out and blow the bubbles, and children will chase those bubbles all day long, trying to chase them. And eventually they may catch one, and when they do, they reach out and they grab it, and they catch that bubble in their hand, they close their hand, but they open their hand and there's nothing there. They spent all that energy, all that effort trying to reach out and grasp something that once they grasp it, they open their hand and it is empty. That's what Solomon's talking about. Emptiness of emptiness. As Solomon looked at all the experiment of life that he engaged in, it was like a child reaching for a bubble and opens it and everything was empty. Solomon had the unique experience to experiment with wealth in a degree that you and I would never be able to imagine. The price of silver had been broken in the land. Streets were paved with it. Solomon, however, as the old man is looking out the window and said, now I've accumulated all of this wealth. But what good does it do to accumulate this wealth if in the end I leave it to a fool? I think he was looking out the window of Rehoboam. I think he understood something about his son, which eventually comes true, obviously. But more than that, Solomon's despair is, I've accumulated all this wealth, but in the end, what's the difference between a man of wealth and a man of poverty? Both die and go to the grave. Solomon will experiment with pleasure. Again, he had the unique opportunity to experiment with pleasure in a way that we could not even imagine. And for all of the myrrh, for all the pleasure that he engaged in, for all of the parties that he was able to host, he looks at that and says, in the end, of what value is simply having another party? In fact, his exclamation is, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to have one more party. Because in the house of mourning, man is brought to contemplate the end of his day. I don't think Solomon's suggesting there we need to run on funerals. I mean, after a while of running on funerals, you learn enough lessons for the time, you need a break. I think what he's simply saying, when you compare the two, of which do you contemplate and learn the most? While you're having a party, you don't stop and think about the verities of life, the serious things of life. You're too busy wrapped up in the marrying and getting in marriage, as the Lord will talk about in Matthew chapter 24, just as in the days of Noah. But in the end, Solomon says, that's all vanity. When you think about the pursuit of wisdom, when Solomon took the throne, he prayed to God not for wealth, but for wisdom. And the wisdom that he prayed for was the wisdom to run a nation. And God blessed him with the wisdom to run a nation. And when you want to talk about how to run a nation, Solomon was great at running a nation and uniting people. But in the end, as the days of his life are being spent, he says, of what value was it to have all this wisdom of how to run a nation if in the end you die like a fool? The wise man and the fool both die alike. Solomon's exclamation in all this is, I've spent my life for what? I spent my life for that which in the end is emptiness. In Luke chapter 12, you have another scenario, another witness to interview. You have the story of the rich farmer that is there. And here's this rich farmer who seems to have all that is there legitimately. He is a successful farmer. His barns are filled and his barns are overflowing, so he's going to build more barns. And he's going to build more barns. And the problem was not that he kept building barns. The fact, I would suggest, that every one of us who are of any age or any length of time in our marriages, we live in different barns than we did when we began. We've all built houses. We all drive different cars. I don't drive the same vehicle I did when Jody and I married. Daddy bought me a doodle bug from a salesman around the Great Lakes, and it had rust spots eaten out all over the body. It looked like it had chicken pox. If you're familiar with a Volkswagen doodle bug, the way you operate the heater vents are there's controls down there by the lever that by the emergency brake that is there. Well, that wasn't how you operated the heater vents in that car, because they were welded shut with corrosion from the salt water. You had to crawl up under the car and tie the heater boxes open for the whole winter. And the way you control the heat was rolling the window up and down. I don't drive that car anymore. I don't live in a one-bedroom apartment anymore. We've all built those bigger barns. We all have bigger houses. And the problem was not the collection of barns. The problem that was this with the man. After having built the barns, he said, soul, take thine ease. Eat, drink, and be married. Do you remember what the Lord said to that man? Thou fool, who shall these things be in the day of your death? We asked that man, really, was your life worth simply harvesting more and building bigger barns, but in the end, you died like a fool? You spent your life increasing your estate. Is that really where the value of your life is?